and welcome to today's Word of Mom Radio here on the Word of Mom Media Network. I'm your host, Dori DiCarlo, and you know we are here week after week, show after show, just breaking those myths that mompreneurs and businesswomen are just dabbling in between bake sales and getting our nails done. We're not. We're smart. We are savvy, and we are sharing the wisdom of women in business and in life. And I'm excited about sharing today's guest, Ivy Oshobudu Onyali. Is a licensed marriage and family therapist who helps women manage anxiety, get rid of insomnia, and learn how to create healthy relationships. She helps her clients find their voice, stop people-pleasing, and heal from their abusive or dysfunctional past. Through her insomnia work, she helps people finally sleep in as little as 5 sessions. You can find out more about the Zinnia practice and meet Ivy as we welcome her to Word of Mom Radio. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Dori.
It is my pleasure. So I'd love for you to just kind of share your journey that has brought you to creating the Zinnia practice.
Oh, well, you know, it's just so amazing. I have a passion for helping women, and through some of my personal struggles and the struggles of some loved ones around me, I had this idea to create a practice specifically for women, helping to empower women, helping them to be able to take care of themselves from the inside out.
So important, because, you know, the people pleasing, it's amazing. Men have no problem saying no and meaning it. And for women, why do you find it so difficult for women to actually say no and not feel bad about it?
Well, you know what? I think a lot of times that's just the way we're raised. We're raised to be caretakers. We're raised to be sweet and pretty and charming. And good girls don't say no. Good girls just need to smile and just look pretty and sit there. So I think that just follows us into adulthood, and we think we're being bad when we set clear boundaries. But little boys are allowed to say no and mean it.
You know, I never thought of it like that, but it's kind of true. You know, I think back to my mom when we were growing up, and my brothers, she would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning when they came in and make them something to eat. And if I said to her, I was like, oh, mom, you know, would you make me something? She's like, why, do you have a broken arm? You know,
exactly.
It's like, it's funny. I never really thought of it, you know.
Right.
How do we as moms not raise our daughters? Although I have to say, I mean, I have a 27-year-old daughter who, boy, did she break the mold, because she will literally say to me, I know this isn't what you want me to do, and frankly, I don't care. And I'm like, you know, there's such a nicer way to say that, honey.
Right.
There really is, because I totally respect that you're going to do what you want the way you want to do it, but you don't have to throw in that I don't care what you think caveat.
Yeah.
You know, but how do we do that? I'm serious. As moms, especially as moms, how do we teach our girls that standing up for themselves is not a bad thing to do?
As moms, I always say, fast forward. Think of what you want your daughter to be 30 years from now. Who do you want her to be? Do you want her to be a pushover? Do you want her to not know what her voice is? Do you want her to be scared of the world? Do you want her to be, you know, ridden with anxiety? Because that's what we set her up for if we don't teach them how to say no. So starting from when you're raising them, when they're having little squabbles at school, it's okay to teach your little kids how to be assertive, not aggressive. I didn't say teach them to, like, fight and hit people, but teach them to be assertive. You know, little girls always have a struggle with, oh my gosh, she said she's not going to play with me. What do I do? Well, do you want to play with her? No, I really don't. Okay, then it's okay to say to her, you know what, maybe I don't want to play with you today. Let me go play with my other friend. So it starts with teaching them and coaching them how to have those conversations. And when they're at home with their brothers, you know, brothers have no problem snatching the toy out of the hands and saying, give it to me. It's okay to teach them to say to their brothers, you know what, actually, that wasn't very nice. I'd like my toy back, please. So teaching them the skills and coaching them, not doing it for them, but coaching them when they're little, to know what they want, first of all, and then to be able to actually say it. Because a lot of times we don't even know what we want. So we need to coach our kids so that they know what they want. They know that it's okay to want something, even if it's different from what other people want.
You know, it's amazing. I just think of my daughter because I have two sons and a daughter. And boy, did she just always march to her own drum. I remember when we moved and she was with a bunch of friends and one of them came over and it's like, they're bullying me. And she had always been the boss of the group. And I was like, what do you mean? It's like, well, everybody wants to do this and I want to do that. And I let them know if they don't want to do what I'm going to do, then I'm not going to play with them. And they all said they want to do what they want to do. And
right.
I was like, but that's not them bullying you, honey. That's actually called majority rules.
Yes.
You know, we do votes in our family. And my sons didn't always side with each other because we're the boys and it's against our sister. They always chose what they wanted to do, you know, and we went in that majority rules. But it was so funny because my daughter was like, she said, Mom, you know me. If I didn't feel like doing it, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to go read because I'm not going to do what I don't want to do.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's amazing because as mothers of daughters, it's so hard to raise them to respect the rules and everything else without breaking that spirit.
Right, right, right.
You know, that incredible independence. So I want to shift and talk about a little bit about your insomnia work and how you were, because, you know, I'm blessed. I'm a stone sleeper. I literally get into bed. I don't even roll over. Whether I can get 8 hours sleep or I can get 3 hours sleep, it doesn't matter. I sleep like a stone. But I know so many people who don't. How do you help that?
Okay. So the treatment is called CBT for insomnia. It's cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. And it's like the hidden gem of insomnia work that nobody talks about and nobody knows about. Even our physicians don't know. So what it does is, the idea behind it is that insomniacs have negative thoughts about sleep. And insomniacs also have really bad habits, but they don't know that they have bad habits. So the thoughts that they're having about sleep, you know, all day long they're thinking, great, I got no sleep, now I'm going to be exhausted. Or they walk into their bedroom and they're thinking, oh, great, it's nighttime again. They're already like thinking ahead of time that they're not going to get any sleep. Now, we know in the therapy world that your thoughts affect how you feel and your feelings affect your behavior. So if I think to myself, great, I'm not going to sleep here. I'm going to be here rolling over for the next 8 hours while my partner is snoring away. You're going to feel upset. When you feel upset, you trigger a stress response in your body. So your body is upset and your body is not going to relax. And you need to be in a relaxed state to sleep, at least for most people, not everyone. And based on that, you're going to be tossing and turning. So again, it's like self-fulfilling prophecy. So it's a 5-session treatment. In the first session, what we do is I go through, you know, all your history to rule out for depression, anxiety, bipolar, or any other disorders that could actually be affecting your sleep. Because sometimes people don't have insomnia, they're depressed. So we work on the depression. And then we also work on relaxation exercises. We work on changing your thoughts about sleep. We go into the science of sleep. And, you know, I teach clients what the body needs to actually create a good sleep environment. We talk about your household and your house and how to set that up for good sleep. And teaching clients how to have great habits. And you won't believe it. For 80 to 90% of clients who do this work, just 5 sessions, if they follow exactly the plan that we've created in, I'll say, less than 2 months, they are sleeping like babies, falling asleep and staying asleep.
Amazing, because I know so many people that struggle with this, you know, and it's funny because, thank God, I mean, my kids all sleep like me and their father.
That's great.
I mean, their dad, it always marveled me that their father literally would just take a deep breath and be sound asleep when his head hit the pillow. That my oldest son is exactly like that. He needs 10 seconds of quiet and that's it. That's wonderful. Always needed, like I would put music on for 10 minutes on a timer button or something, something that inspires me that I want to fall asleep. And that's what I'll do to kind of just fall out.
That's
great. You know, but I had always heard, you know, you should never watch TV. I don't have a TV in my bedroom.
That's great.
You know, that bed is for sleep. And I think very often we kind of, you know, even when I don't feel well, I have to be really, really sick to actually stay in bed. I'd rather snuggle
up
on my couch.
That's wonderful.
Good.
Yes, those are all great habits. Actually, you're doing all the right things. The bedroom is for sleep and sex. That is it. Nothing else. It's not your office. It's not your relaxation zone. It's a place for sleep and sex, period. Everything else, watching of TV, being on the laptop, homework, work, career stuff, take that outside of your bedroom so that your bedroom becomes a trigger for sleep, not for work. So for most people, when they go into their bedrooms at night, because they're working in their bedrooms all day, they're triggering work. Their brain is like, oh, we're in work mode. We're here to work, as opposed to I'm here to sleep.
Now, it's funny. I always have my phone because my kids are grown and gone. And if that phone rings in the middle of the night, I have do not disturb on, but there's that handful of people outside of my children too, that if they need me at 3 o'clock in the morning, I want them to be able to reach me for a little bit of time. I got into that habit when I'd get up in the morning, I'd kind of roll over, grab my phone, check Facebook. Mm. And I did it for about 3 weeks. And then I was like, you know what? No,
no,
this is not where I should be looking at my phone, other than, oh, the kids sent me a text.
Exactly.
And even then, I don't even want to turn it on until I get out of the bedroom. But I'm serious. I got into it for about 3 weeks, and I was lying there one day and just, and I was like, ew, what am I doing?
Oh, no, 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 no. I always say an hour before sleep, and I do believe that even adults should have bedtimes. An hour before it's your bedtime, put away all the electronics and begin to create a relaxing state for yourself. Put on some music, like you said, calming music, drink some tea, begin, do some stretches, create that relaxing environment an hour before your bedtime so that your brain is actually able to slow down after your busy day. Because for so many people, they're not as lucky as you. They're not able to just plop into bed and fall asleep. They need to actually train their bodies and soothe their bodies into that sleep state. So that's what I recommend.
I'm an avid, I like either Sleepy Time Tea or Tension Tamer from Celestial Seasons if I'm really stressed out. And it's funny because I used to tell people all the time, it's like I let that tea steep for about 10 minutes. So it's the perfect drinking temperature. I will drink it down and then squeeze the tea bag to get all those vitamin D antioxidants. And in about 20 minutes, that's liquid Valium for me.
Perfect.
I'm just, I'll be sitting here and I'll feel that wave and just go, it's time for bed. And
just go to bed.
You know, but I've had that. I'm a tea drinker. I'm sitting here sipping my Earl Grey right now as we speak. So I've never had a cup of coffee. But I do believe in nighttime routines. But, you know, I had my grandson all weekend long. Yes. And even he and I have our little, he just turned 20 months old, and, you know, we have our little routine. He's now at the point that he can climb out of the crib. So, fortunately, he'll just snuggle with his Mimi, and he falls asleep.
Aww.
And then I put him to bed. At home, when I'm watching him at his house, I put him down to bed, and before I'm downstairs and turn the monitor on, he's already asleep.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I do. I try to have that little routine with him and our book and our song and our prayers and,
wonderful.
You know, those little bitty things. It's so much fun. It really is.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
On that note, we don't usually take a break when it's my statement, but we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, I want to start talking about your whole family therapy and the issues that families are coping with. So we will be right back here on Word of Mom Radio. As parents, keeping our school safe is our utmost concern. SafetyBags.com offers a line of clear bags and backpacks, not only for the students, but for the teachers, administrators, and everyone else entering that school, because asking our students to carry clear bags puts the responsibility of keeping our school safe literally on the backs of our children. Safety Bags offers a way to partner with the schools in keeping them safe. So visit us at safetybags.com and you will see why we are the clear choice. Because safety, it's in the bag.
We all know a survivor. Some of our friends and family have made it through difficult times. Some of us don't make it. Losing a loved one to cancer, a car accident, or any other unfortunate event can be crippling and unavoidable. But one of the hardest subjects to talk about is suicide. Too often, our youth decide that leaving this place is easier than facing the struggle forced upon them every day. More than one in four children go through some form of bullying or another. Most of us survive with scars, but for some, the inner demons created cannot be recognized or treated in time to ensure they make it through. Bullying bullying in every form is very much avoidable. It starts with me and it starts with you. This is Kelly Carius from No Such Thing as a Bully, reminding you to do your part when you see bullying happen. If you don't know what that is, call 403-447-4404 or go to nosuchthingasabully.com.
Join stadiumbags.com in our efforts to keep schools safe. 10% of every bag sold will now be donated to different organizations promoting safety in our learning environments. Not only do our clear bags take the hassle out of going through security, but they make a difference. So join us at stadiumbags.com because you'll see why we are the clear choice, because safety, it's in the bag. And we're back here on Word of Mom Radio, and we are talking with Ivy and from the Zinnia practice, and I want to talk about family therapy and the importance of what you can do as a family therapist and kind of the most frequent issues you see couples struggling with.
Yeah. So first of all, I have to say that the average couple doesn't come into therapy until they've been struggling for about 6 to 7 years. 6 to 7 years. So by this time, a lot of couples are basically at war, or they are not speaking to each other, or they're just roommates. So some of the main issues that we see, number one is infidelity, whether it is emotional or it's actual physical. Some of the issues that we see are family issues. So your family doesn't do things the way I want it to be done, or your family doesn't do things X, Y, Z, and they just can't come to terms with that. Or their parenting is another big hot button topic. You're not raising the kids the way I want. You're too strict with the kids, or you're too soft with the kids. And they just can't figure it out. And it's important for me to insert here that majority of the arguments that couples actually have are unsolvable issues. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody has to end up in divorce. No, it just means that we've been thinking about conflict the wrong way. Instead of trying to solve conflict, couples need to learn to compromise in conflict, because they're two different individuals and you're not always going to agree, but compromise is key.
I was just actually writing that as you were saying. I'm an avid note taker because of my ADD. I constantly take notes. And as you were saying that, it's like, boy, compromise really is key. And, you know, sadly, sometimes compromise is really that you just don't work well. My children's dad and I were in therapy for 5.5 years of the 7.5 years we were married. Yeah. So we didn't get that far. We were, you know, year and a half. We already had really, you know what? And we just didn't work married. We didn't bring out the best in each other married. But you know what? We raised our 3 children, and now we get to marvel at our grandson. And we have a granddaughter coming, so, you know, we're fortunate to have a successful divorce, because I think one of the big things we need to remember when we can't make it work is that our children aren't the pawns in the chess game of our life.
You know, I love that you said successful divorce. I love that you said successful divorce, because sometimes the goal of therapy is to help both parties have a successful divorce, parent the kids so that they don't have to suffer, and eventually get to a place where they can actually be civil towards one another for the sake of the kids and for the sake of their own peace of mind.
I agree. You know, it's funny. My son, our oldest has an April birthday, and so my children's dad always did the grill, and I was inside. Mm-hmm. And I was shopping, and they had this great grill with the burner on sale on the outside, and so I bought it. And they were cleaning up the yard. My children's dad is a tree surgeon, so they were doing the big yard cleanup for the party.
Yeah.
And I was like, Dan, I got this great grill for you to be able to cook out. And he's like, who's putting it together? I was like, I'm putting it together now, because I was the mechanic. And my kids' friends were like, seriously, your mom got that grill so your dad could grill better? It's like, my parents are married and they don't get along as well as your parents do. And the interesting thing is, when we got divorced, our kids were 6, 4, and 2. We tried about 7 or 8 years after we got divorced. We actually tried getting back together. Right. And my children were now old enough to go, you know what? Now we understand why we're divorced. You work
right.
better in two different houses. We just we just didn't bring out the best in each other. We just don't. We're
right.
so different. Just so completely different. But we brought out the best in each other as parents. And
that's wonderful.
That was what was important, because for me, you know, when we first were going through all of this, you know, I refused to go to court. And I said to him, I was like, if we go to court, we'll never find a way to be friends. And
that's
he was
true.
Like, how can we be friends? We're getting divorced. And I was like, yeah, but you know what? That's our problem. Those
right.
three people inside, it's not their fault. We
true.
Have to do whatever we have to do to make it simpler and easier for them.
Right.
You know? And so that's
right.
why I applaud what you do, Ivy, because it is
thank
so
you.
Important for people to understand that, you know what, sometimes relationships aren't going to work.
Yes.
You know, but
yes.
that when you have, if you don't have any kids, who cares how you treat each other?
Right, exactly.
But once you've got children involved, they're the casualties.
I agree.
They deserve the least amount of damage. So
yes.
I have to ask you, why do you think couples wait 6 or 7 years before they seek help?
Well, some are embarrassed. First of all, some are embarrassed and they're like, if I seek help, then it means that I have failed. I have done something that is so bad that I can't even fix. Two, some are in denial. They say, well, our issues aren't that bad because all couples fight. So they're in denial. They're in denial. And there's still this horrible, horrible stigma about seeking therapy because for some reason, people think that therapy is for, I don't know, crazy people or for people who are, you know, extremely depressed or for people who are going through some severe mental illness or something like that. There's still this horrible stigma. And sometimes some couples don't even want to work their issues out. They just pretend like they want to, but they really don't. Mm. But some of them do not want to be able to say to their partner, you know what, this isn't working. Let's just separate or let's just divorce. So they'll just pretend and go through this whole charade. And they're secretly hoping and wishing that the partner, you know, walks away one day, but they don't want to be the one to, you know, throw in the towel and say that I'm done. So there's so many different reasons. And a lot of times they'll try and fix the issues, but it'll take, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years. And then they're like, oh boy, the issue keeps coming back. Those persistent nagging problems keep coming back. For some people, it doesn't even occur to them because they think, well, nobody goes to therapy, so why should I go to therapy? But what they don't understand is a lot of people go to therapy. They just might not tell you that they're going to therapy.
Right. Why do you think there is still such a stigma to this?
You know what? I wish there was a simple answer to this question. But if you look at the history of mental health, you know, at the beginning, mental health was for quote-unquote crazy people. You know, people in straight jackets thrown into a horrible padded cell and the key was thrown away and they were never to be seen again. But as, of course, the years went on, we realized that, no, actually, you can't even do therapy with somebody who is not coherent. It's not even possible. I think people still equate therapy with something is wrong with me. It's always something is wrong with me as opposed to I have some issues I'm struggling with, and this professional will help me fix it. We don't see therapists the same way we see our doctors. You know, people, if my arm is broken, I'll happily go to the doctor, and he'll set my bones, and I'll be fine. You know, I don't see it as a personal problem. I just see it as, oh, okay, there's something going on, but I'll be fine. Therapy, we tend to internalize things, and we tend to think, there's something so deeply wrong with me that I can't fix it myself, and here I am having to go to this person and talk about my issue. So we internalize it and we make it seem a lot worse than it actually is.
How can a couple find a therapist that they can trust?
Okay. So there are a couple of different ways. One of them, I would say, start with your friends and your family and ask them, do you have a therapist that I can trust? Because like I said, although there's this idea that nobody's going to therapy, that's not true. A lot of people are going to therapy. So ask your friends and family members, you know, do you have a therapist that you go to or you've worked with in the past? That's one way. Another way is, you know, just doing a Google search. Just Google couples therapy in whatever your city is or therapy for, I don't know, anxiety or whatever it is that you're going through and you're looking for. Female therapist in whatever, male, whatever it is that you want, do a Google search. And I would say that when if you do a Google search and it's not somebody that's recommended by someone you know, call the therapist and ask them for a free consultation call, because a lot of times we do that. That consultation call is key because you get to hear the therapist's voice, you get to ask them about how they work, and you get to get a sense of how comfortable or not that you are with the therapist. If you don't feel comfortable talking to a therapist on the phone for those 10, 15 minutes, do not make an appointment with that therapist, because for you to be successful in therapy, you have to love your therapist. You have to be able to trust that therapist. There are also some directories that you can go to. Psychology Today is probably the most popular one, and you can go to and you can search by your zip code and, you know, different criteria. And as usual, you know, when you find maybe like three or four therapists that you think you like, after reading their bios, call them and talk to them first before you go in.
What does therapy look like,
okay,
generally?
Okay. So, you know, people always think, because of course therapy is done behind closed doors, people think it's this like secret weird thing where we're casting spells or something. I don't know what people are imagining we're doing, but I know for me, the way I work, different therapists work in different ways, is I take the first session to really get to know you and get to know your background and your history. And I go into that kind of stuff because I want to know who you are. I want to truly know who you are, every piece of the puzzle. And at the end of that first session, we figure out your goals. Same thing in couples therapy, by the way. In couples therapy, I'll see the couple as a unit first, get to know them, and then I'll also see each partner separately because I really want to get to know each person, their goals, and what they're trying to achieve. Some are trying to achieve a successful marriage. Some are trying to achieve a successful divorce. I don't put my goals on you. Whatever goals you tell me you want to work on, that's what we do. And as we have that overarching goal, each week I use different techniques to help you meet those goals. It's all about you. It's all about what you want to talk about. And I just give you tools to meet those goals. The therapy room is a place where you get to talk about everything that has been on your chest. No filter. No filter. You can talk about everything that's bothering you, everything you like, everything you hate. Bring it all in and we'll figure out tools to help you reach your goals and be the happier, healthier you that you want to be, essentially. So it's just like having a conversation with someone, only that I allow you to self-reflect and we come up with answers a lot quicker than if you were to just kind of reflect on your own.
When should a couple seek therapy?
The moment you sense that something is off. The moment, I don't care if you've been married 2 days, 1 hour, or 40 years. The moment you sense that something is off and that a problem is it's feeling like there's no solution, go see a therapist. Now, some couples think that if they go see a therapist, that it means that they're going to get a divorce. No, that's not true at all. That is not true at all. Some people just go in for regular tune-up. So the moment you feel like, okay, we keep butting heads about this same one issue, the therapist will show you how to seek compromise and how to have conversations. My goal when I work with couples and even individuals is to teach you to do these skills on your own so that you don't even need me anymore, to teach you to be such a great communicator, to be so great at compromise, to understand your partner so well, to build a friendship so strong that you're able to deal with these issues without it becoming a fight. And if you do end up in a fight, or, you know, like a yelling match or whatever with your partner, I teach you the skills how to take a time out, how to bring it all the way down, how to be respectful with one another so that these fights don't become just a normal part of your life.
On that note, perfect time to say thank you so much, Ivy, for being here. Please let everyone know how they can reach you.
So you can find me on my website. It's thezinniapractice.com, and Zinnia is Z-I-N-N-I-A, so thezinniapractice.com. And I'm also on Instagram and Facebook as The Zinnia Practice.
Any parting words before we end conversation?
Well, here's the thing. Everybody goes through ups and downs. So if you're going through a struggle, you're not alone. There's nothing wrong. It's not the end of the world. Everybody goes through struggles, and there's no shame in seeking help from a therapist. We're trained. This is what we do, and we're more than happy to help you navigate those difficult parts of your life.
I thank you so much for being here with us today, Ivy. I hope people reach out to you. I really do, and I applaud the work that you are doing on behalf of empowering women and couples. So for all of you tuning in here, my pleasure. To Word of Mom Radio, I want to thank you for sharing your time with us. This is Dori DiCarlo on behalf of everyone here at the Word of Mom Media Network, thanking you for joining us again. And we're going to close out with our fabulous theme song from Smith Sisters Bluegrass. So until next time, go out and create a marvelous you. Bye for now. She is sure. She is